Prices are now skyrocketing from the gas pump to the grocery store. And Joe Biden is not blaming his policies. In fact, he says his policies are helping the situation. He instead is blaming Putin and even Donald Trump, which of course is ludicrous. Let's take a look. This is Beyond the Cover and your host, Gary Benoit. And today we're delighted to have with us from East Asia, an academic and an expert regarding economics, Charles Scaliger. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hi, Gary. Thank you very much.
Now, Charles, you just wrote a cover story article for the New American Magazine, and the title is Biden's Price Hike. And it shows here a gas pump, and it shows a sticker of Biden pointing to the price, and it says, I did that. Now, of course, in your article, you point out that prices are going up, but not just because of Joe Biden. They're going up for other reasons as well, including the policies of the Federal Reserve and of Congress. But, Steve, let's start with Joe Biden. Is it fair to say that prices are going up at the gas pump because of his policies?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone but the most purblind Democratic partisan has to admit and acknowledge that what we call the rate of inflation has been climbing steeply almost from the beginning of the Biden administration. And obviously some recent political factors like the war in Ukraine have exacerbated that. But these trends were underway and very visible long before the Ukraine war or Vladimir Putin had any say in the matter. And of course, as you note, those little stickers on the gas pumps go back as well almost to the beginning of the Biden administration. They've been a fixture in the American landscape since early last year. So to ascribe all of this to malevolent acts by Putin or something like that is just absurd.
Now, of course, people who are following the news do know that during the Trump administration, that after many decades of dangerous dependence for foreign oil, that the United States actually achieved energy independence. But that energy independence was squandered. It was lost almost overnight after Biden became president. What happened?
Well, as most of your listeners doubtless are aware, his first day as president, Biden began signing executive orders that had the effect of canceling almost all of the, well, I think all, 100% of all of the energy-related policies that had been enacted by the Trump administration, including, of course, an emphasis on more development of American energy resources in Alaska, and of course the fracking industry and things like this, and as well the long contested Keystone XL pipeline from the Alberta tar sands, which would have provided America with another really major source, a convenient source of petroleum. Technically, of course, Canada is a foreign country, but we all know that the relationship enjoyed by the United States and Canada is a special one and in no way commensurable with, say, our relationship with Saudi Arabia or Russia or Venezuela or even Mexico or a host of other, major petroleum-producing countries in the world. So the effect of the Trumpet-era policies was to achieve something that, for a very long time, for decades, was regarded as impossible, namely to create American self-sufficiency as far as energy production was concerned. And by energy, we mean coal, oil, natural gas, and to a much more limited extent, of course, nuclear power and so forth. And all of that was literally reversed by a stroke of a pen within a few hours of the beginning of the Biden administration. And so that was something that one of those factors above and beyond inflation per se that, of course, has been a major contributor to the rising fuel prices, which in turn have percolated out through the rest of the economy, because of course fuel prices are significant in terms of the production and transport of manufactured goods and foodstuffs and so forth and so on. So that's had a major effect, and that's directly traceable to policy decisions that were voluntarily enacted by the Biden administration, have never been revoked or modified in any way, and set from that day to this, of course, the the Biden administration, as well as his Democratic supporters in Congress and the larger penumbra of supporters in Washington and elsewhere in the United States, have doubled down and tripled down and quadrupled down to the effect that, no, these policies have nothing to do with that. Now, I would add that, people might ask, well, why double down on such obviously irrational policies? And the answer is tied to another decision made by the Biden administration, which was also a reversal of a Trump-era policy that I did not mention in the article, but I think bears brief mention. And that is, of course, the reversal again of the American position on the Paris Accord, the climate accord, which, of course, is a UN document, a UN treaty that has the effect of, if not compelling, then very strongly persuading or exercising suasion over all signatory countries to bring their domestic energy policies in line with UN climate standards. And of course, that means forcibly transforming one's economy away from dependence on fossil fuels. That's a big part of the Paris Accords program. Of course, the Trump administration quickly exited the Paris Accord that had been signed by the Obama administration. And of course, President Obama, like President Biden now, had signaled his intent to comply with that. It was reversed by President Trump and then immediately reversed again as soon as Biden was in office. So that's the underlying motivation behind all of this and the reason for this fanatical commitment to, you know, it doesn't matter how bad things get, how high prices get, how much people have to suffer, we are going to enforce these new climate edicts by hook or by crook.
Well, of course, there's no question, Charles, that prices are galloping in large part because of the regulatory climate, because of these ridiculous regulations that you described, such as the climate change regulations, the regulations to make us dangerously dependent again on foreign oil and so forth. But how about other policies? How about inflation? How is that figuring in? And by inflation, the true definition of inflation, monetary inflation, which we don't usually hear about. We usually hear just about what's happening at the grocery stores or at the gas pumps in terms of price increases. But what is behind those increases in addition to regulations?
Well, it's a good thing you use the word policy, because the economist Ludwig von Mises observed long ago that inflation is not some accident of circumstances. It is a policy and can only be correctly understood as such, meaning that it is deliberately embarked upon. And it is, of course, a policy means that it's a government policy, in effect. Now, the thing is, inflation has always been with us since the inception of the modern American monetary system with the creation of the Federal Reserve more than 100 years ago. The Federal Reserve is America's central bank, and modern central banks are, all of them, purely inflationary. Now, we don't have time to go into all of the details of how inflation takes place. The phenomenon of inflation is really quite simple to understand. It is when governments, with the help of the banking system and their own treasury department, create money, print money, in effect. And so that's what inflation is. And the effect of it is that prices across the board, not in specific geographical areas or confined to specific industries, but across the board, rise slowly or rapidly, but rise consistently and nonstop across the years, across the decades, across the generation. Okay, so that's the phenomenon of inflation. And it, and, you know, historically speaking, inflation has been around ever as long as developed states have been. But in the past, it was relatively simple to create. So in ancient Rome, it was created by debasing the quality of the money, the precious metal in the coinage, or by clipping the coins, by literally shaving or clipping off the edges of gold and silver coins so as to declare arbitrarily that the money was worth more than it was and the government would pocket the difference. In more recent modern times, in the Chinese dynasties, the Ming Dynasty and so forth, in Massachusetts Bay Colony, in colonial America, and of course, during the Revolutionary War under Continental Congress, money was literally created by being printed on paper and then rather crudely dispensed directly into the economy. And the problem with that is that it becomes easy for people to recognize what inflation is. So the modern inflationary game is a little more subtle. The phenomenon of inflation remains very simple and straightforward. So what we need to do, if we are the monetary authorities and are dependent on this system, is we need to complicate the process. In other words, create a series of rather arcane processes that are not so straightforward as just printing money, let's say, and throwing out of helicopters or some such, but instead finding more subtle ways to introduce new money that's being created by the government and the banking system into the economy. Okay. Now, prior to the great financial crisis of 2007 through 2009, the great recession, as it's come to be known, there were essentially three ways of doing this, three ways by which the government could, you know, modify the monetary supply. The most important is what's called open market operations. Mm-hmm. And these were invented about 100 years ago by a man named Benjamin Strong, who was the longtime chair of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and quite a financial whiz. And this is now used by central banks all over the world, open market operations. We don't have a lot of time, so I won't go into it much, but it's basically where the central bank buys and sells government securities in secondary markets. Ever since the great financial collapse of 2008, Ben Bernanke, who was the Federal Reserve chair at that time, created a whole, like four or five or six new ways by which the Fed can pump more money into the system. So it's become incredibly complex, even though the principle is very simple. The reason governments rely on inflation is that instead of having to tax directly, they can print the money instead, and most people can't understand then what's going on. But inflation, in fact, is a form of tax, and over time, it's a lot more dishonest, and it has the effect of distorting prices, distorting people's perception of how money and savings should work. And ultimately, inflation depends on debt, because the way that governments introduce money into the economy is by using debt. They issue debt and then they pay for it with new money. Okay, so that's why the Biden administration can get away with all these new quote unquote spending programs. They're actually debt and inflationary programs, because to finance the Green New Deal and all these other conceits that they're coming up with, they need to borrow the money, and then they pay for, over time, all this borrowed money by issuing new debt, and the result is to create lots of new money. The same can be said for all these stimulus packages. And so this is why we've had a surge of new money under the Biden administration. Note that Biden's predecessor, Trump, and all other American presidencies and Congresses dating back to the creation of the Federal Reserve have also been inflationary. But the Biden administration has been particularly egregious.
Right. Well, inflationary in the sense that the government is spending more than they're collecting in taxes. And so they're building up these gargantuan debts. And then they're literally monetizing those debts through the Federal Reserve and basically creating those debts into money. And as you pointed out, Charles, when you look at the particulars, it is very confusing. But like you said, the principles are really very simple. And one way I like to look at it is think in terms of a Monopoly game. And I think everybody's familiar with the Monopoly game. But if the banker were to break the rules of the game and decide to hand out to each player a huge sum of additional money, you know, obviously the bidding for the properties is going to skyrocket. And you can look at the economy as a whole as being the same thing. And so my question for you, Charles, is can they really be that stupid? I mean, can these people who are making these policies be so stupid as to think that they can create all this additional money, drop money from helicopters in a figurative sense, as you pointed out, flood the economy with all these new dollars and not expect the inflation to occur at the grocery store or the gas pump?
Well, I'm not sure of the answer to that, because I don't claim to be an expert on all the dark psychology that goes on in the myrmidons of the deep state. So it may well be. I do know that there's a new movement afoot called modern monetary theory. Mm-hmm. It's not really new, but it's a new fashionable new economic school that's been around since the early 1990s and has really taken root in Washington. And the essence of it, again, I go into some detail in the article, but it sort of dresses up some old fallacies in new, more modern 21st century garb. But in effect, the idea is that you really can get something for nothing. And because we can print money that is denominated in our own currency, because governments can create an unlimited supply of it, that therefore there really is nothing to be feared. That all of these ideas of crack-up booms and hyperinflation are bugbears as long as certain proprieties are observed. So that's the essence of it. So I think a lot of them are true believers in this. There are a lot of people among left-leaning economists who don't quite go that far, who do understand, at least to some extent, the dangers of printing too much money and all this kind of thing. But I think what you see is a broad consensus in mainstream American politics that some measure of inflation is a good thing. So they don't disagree so much in principle, but in degree. All right. And then again, of course, the left has never really understand how economics works anyway. And I think also one final factor is a lot of them don't care, even if they do understand, because their goal, particularly among the more radical members of the American left, is to destroy the capitalist economy anyway. And so, Karl Marx, for example, one of his central recommendations was the creation of a central bank with a monopoly on money creation. And he did that because he knew that was a way of at once, asserting control over money and also destroying capitalism. So that is really
no question that there are certainly true believers, and no question, as you also pointed out, that there are people who know exactly what they're doing, but they're doing it anyway. But what do you think the bottom line is? In other words, do you think those who are able to operate the instruments of power are actually trying to destroy the economy to bring about the destruction of the United States in order to put in its place a new world order?
In my opinion, that is absolutely the case, particularly with the current administration. It is populated from top to bottom, including the president himself, with people with a clear radical track record and who have gone on record repeatedly talking about these kinds of objectives. So I think there's no doubt that that's what they're aiming for.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Charles. And before we wrap up, is there anything you'd like to add?
A lot that I'd like to add, but in terms of the time frame, we should probably limit ourselves.
Very good. We appreciate the fact you came on the program, and appreciate the wonderful articles that you've been doing for the New American Magazine, of course, including this most recent one, Biden's price hike, that appears in the May 30 issue of the New American Magazine. And for those who would like to see the article, please click on the link in the description. Thank you very much.